I think one of the more amusing stories in the news this week, I don't know whether anybody else came across this one, about a lady in Devon who phoned the police after seeing a car accident. She used this this thing on Windows 10, Cortana, the digital assistant. She used that to find the number of Barnstable Police. And when she got through, there was a rather confused conversation until both she and the police officer realized that Cortana had helpfully put her through to Barnstable in Massachusetts rather than the one in Devon. Apparently it was when the officer she was talking to hadn't heard of Ilfracombe that she realized that something was definitely wrong here. What a bizarre thing, isn't it? Thinking you're talking to one person, only to find it's someone completely different in a different place, and the whole conversation just doesn't work. I actually think that was the sort of issue which Jesus' disciples had to deal with on several occasions. They spent time with Jesus. They thought they were beginning to understand who he was, and then suddenly something would happen, and it showed that they were on the wrong wavelength. It meant they had to once again rethink who Jesus was and rethink their relationship with him. We're continuing our series on Jesus on discipleship. And tonight we find the disciples very confused about who Jesus is and consequently confused about how they should respond to him. But as we look at that in scripture and we look at what happened to them, it can in turn help us to understand something more about who Jesus is. It can help us to understand something more about what it means to be his disciples. So let's turn to our Bible reading as Anne comes to read for us.
The Bible reading can be found on page 1006 of the Pew Bibles, and it's Mark chapter 4, beginning at verse 35. Jesus calms the storm. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, just as he was, in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." This is the gospel of Christ.
Jesus had had been having a hectic time. He was right in the public eye. Everybody wanted a bit of his time and attention. Earlier in Mark 4, we read, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake, and a large crowd from Galilee followed. When they heard all he was doing, many people came to him from Judea, Jerusalem, Idumea, the region across Jordan, around Tyre and Sidon. Because of the crowd, he told his disciples to have a small boat ready for him to keep the people from crowding him. And even Jesus couldn't sustain the pressure of that sort of ministry indefinitely. So as we heard from our reading, they set out to cross the lake. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. That was something which happened from time to time on Galilee. And these men were fishermen. They knew the lake like the back of their hands. They knew about these sudden changes in weather that could happen because of the lake's position. It was surrounded by ravines in the hills. If the wind came down one of them, it got choppy. But they knew very well that this wasn't a case of the lake being a bit choppy. The waves were breaking right over the boat. And they knew that all too easily the boat could go down. And if that happened, they wouldn't have a lot of hope. I suspect that they'd probably lost friends in storms like this. And now they thought it was their turn. They were terrified. All apart from one person in the boat. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" I don't know about you, but I can certainly sympathize with how they felt. I have never been in a situation anything like that, but even being in a relatively insignificant storm on a thumping great ferry, I thought my end had come. These were in a small boat. And so I have to say, the Jesus question after he stilled the storm does at first hearing sound, frankly, pretty unreasonable. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid?" Why are we afraid? What sort of question is that when a storm like this is happening? But then straight away he said, "Do you still have no faith?" So clearly, their being afraid had something to do with not having faith. But what did Jesus mean? I think that what Jesus was getting at was that they still hadn't grasped the truth about him. Sure, they'd seen him do some remarkable things. In Mark 1, Jesus healed many people, including those with leprosy, which was the ultimate incurable disease. In Mark 2, he healed a paralyzed man. They were remarkable things. But it was when he healed that paralyzed man that Jesus did something even more dramatic, because he told him that his sins were forgiven. And you'll know the passage, I'm sure. The teachers of the law who were there fully understood what that meant, because they said, "He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone?" And actually, by healing the man, Jesus showed that he could indeed forgive sins, and that, yes, he was God. But that was such a mind-boggling thought that not even the disciples could really understand it. What could it possibly mean for this man we've been following around, great teacher though he is, what could it mean for him to be God? It just stretches your understanding. And that brings us to this incident. Because you see, if Jesus is God, then he has everything under his control. Psalm 95:5 says, "The sea is his, for he made it." Or more significantly, Psalm 89:9, "You rule over the surging sea. When its waves mount up, you still them." So if Jesus is God, then the sea is under his control. So, of course, there was no way that a storm could drown him. Admittedly, he was asleep in the boat, but that didn't alter the fact that as God, the sea was under his control, not the other way around. And because the disciples were with him, how could it drown them? Certainly this storm appeared powerful, but it was not as powerful as the Son of God. And to prove the point, he got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. So there's that question, do you still have no faith? I think that in our society, generally, the term faith tends to be used in a very abstract way, as though somehow having faith in anything is what matters. But in the Bible, of course, it operates in a very different way. Faith isn't kind of so much about a feeling that we have. What's important is who or what you have faith in, or don't have faith in. It's the sort of thing that Hudson Taylor was speaking about when he once said, "What is important isn't great faith, but faith in a great God." It's the location of your faith that's important. And so when Jesus says, "Do you still have no faith?" I think it's another way of him saying, do you still not recognize who I am? And of course, even after this, they still didn't get it. They were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. And of course, if they'd recognized who Jesus was, if they had followed through the logic of the fact that Jesus is God, they would have known why the winds and the waves obey him. But because they didn't understand who Jesus was, their response to him stilling the storm was, I just don't think it's at all what we would expect. You would think that having been in this boat, thrown around by the waves, saturated and terrified, that when the storm was stilled, they would have been absolutely overjoyed. But they weren't. They were terrified. Fear of the storm had been replaced by another fear. The fear of being in the presence of someone who was clearly far more than human. It's a very similar response to one of Jesus' miracles in Luke chapter 5. The disciples had been out fishing, they'd caught nothing. Jesus told them to let the nets down again, and this time they pulled in an amazing catch of fish. And again, you'd think they would be overjoyed, but in Luke 5:8, when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man." Peter saw what had happened. At that time, he did put two and two together and realized that this again pointed to Jesus being God, and he knew that he was not worthy to be in the presence of God and would rather that God was some distance away from him. And this time, it's as though realizing that they're in the presence of God is actually as frightening, if not more frightening, than being in the presence of a raging storm. And I wonder when the last time you felt like that was. When was the last time you felt terrified at the thought of being in God's presence? I suspect it's quite rare. And of course there are very good reasons why it's quite rare, because of the fact that we have access to God through Jesus. But I think there's another problem. You see, maybe our age, more than any other, has lost any sense of the holiness and greatness of God. The theologian David Wells wrote that God has become weightless. He wrote, "Those who assure the pollsters of their belief in God's existence may nonetheless consider him less interesting than television. His commands less authoritative than their own appetites for affluence and influence, his judgments no more awe-inspiring than the evening news, and his truth less compelling than the advertiser's sweet fog of flattery and lies." That is weightlessness. Of course, it isn't just non-Christians who treat God like that. It's all too easy for those of us who are Christians to still treat God as if he's there for our convenience. To have faith in Jesus means recognizing who he is. He is God the Son. And so to take him lightly or casually is to show that you don't really believe that. So those words of Jesus are still a challenge to us. Do you still have no faith? Do you actually take seriously who Jesus is? It's like the famous little bit from C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, where Susan has met up with Mr. Beaver. And Beaver says, "Aslan is a lion, the lion, the great lion. Oh, said Susan, I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. Safe? Said Mr. Beaver. Who said anything about safe? Course he isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king, I tell you. And of course, C.S. Lewis has been so perceptive because Aslan is the character who represents Jesus. And I think the disciples had just realized that, that even if Jesus was someone who could still a storm, he's not safe. But he is good. He's the king. So what's this all got to do with this discipleship thing? Well, I think one thing it means that when we want to share the good news of Jesus with others, we need to make sure that we aren't just presenting him as the one who can solve all your problems, the one who will do what you ask him to. You see, Jesus is Lord. Being a disciple means submitting every area of my life to him, not expecting him to submit himself to my wants and needs. It is not a game. It is not something you can take casually. So stilling the storm shows us who Jesus is. But it actually does more than that. Because if Jesus is God, if he's the one who demands my absolute allegiance, my absolute obedience, why should I bother? Wouldn't it just be easier to be like Peter in that other incident and say, oh, go away from me, Lord. If Jesus makes those demands on us, why should we follow them through? And the answer is, of course, that life can be a very stormy business. You might never be in a small boat in a literal storm, but I can pretty well guarantee that at some time the storms of life will hit you. Illness, either for you or someone close to you. Family breakdown. Loss of job, financial problems, the list could go on. Any of those things could leave you feeling like these disciples, that you are facing a storm which threatens to overwhelm you. So when you face one of life's storms, wouldn't it be good to have Jesus in the boat with you? To know that with him on board, the storm might be pretty rough, but that if he is on board, it will not sink you. That's what we find in that famous passage in Isaiah 43. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. Surely it's what everybody wants. And that is the promise to disciples. It's the promise to the ones who've got into the boat with Jesus. The ones who've heard his call, follow me, and have begun to understand what it means to follow and have said yes. You see, what Jesus says about discipleship is, it's not a game. It demands everything. It's costly. It's not something you can be casual about. It really is all or nothing. But then he says, when you give all you are to Jesus, he gives all he is to you. And to me, that sounds like a very good swap.